welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan, and I'm so excited today because we've got Christy DeMeester on the podcast. I love Christy. I love her books. I read Such a Pretty Smile with my book club, and I just finished reading Dark Sisters, which is what she's here to talk about today. It comes out December 9th, and it's so good, and it's so dark, and it made me cry a little bit. We'll get into it. But right here at the top, I did want to mention that Christy DeMeester is coming to Gibson's Bookstore on Tuesday, January 27th at 6:30 p.m. She will be at the bookstore, so you can pre-order your copy of Dark Sisters now. You can read it over the holiday break and then join us in January to hear Christy talk about the book and get your book signed, and it's going to be a great time. So, without further ado, please enjoy my chat with Christy DeMeester. Christy DeMeester, welcome to the podcast.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I always love doing things like this.
It's so much fun. I wish you could have seen my face when the emails started coming through that we were working on an event with you and that there was maybe going to be a podcast interview. And I turned and looked at my 16 different Christy DeMeester candles. And I was like, oh, this is going to be fun.
Oh, my gosh. I love that because it's certainly one of those things where you have so many facets of your life, and then there are parts of you forget. You know, like, even though I know the shop exists and I know the candles are out there, it is still so funny to me sometimes to hear someone say, oh, and I love your candles. And I go, wait, what? And then I have to remind myself, oh, yeah, there's that too. And actually, thank you. That's a very good reminder that I need to order all my Christmas oils and whatnot and get that, because
season.
I've had the shop closed for a little bit now, just because I knew with going into Dark Sisters launch, things really were ramping up, and I'm also on deadline working on the next book.
Oh my gosh.
So I needed to take one thing off the plate, and that was the one thing that, so, you know, I can't not care for my kid. I can't. Right. So that was the thing that had to come off. So, but that's so funny. That's wonderful to hear.
I love them. They're my favorite candles. I give them to all my friends. I'm just like, spooky cat. I'll put a link in the show notes for listeners because they're delightful.
Yes. And that's a great reminder that I actually need to go and get everything ready for the holiday season because yes.
Yeah, it's that time. But Dark Sisters is about to come out. Oh my gosh.
I know. I can't believe it. I am in, and I was talking with my very good other writer friend, Rachel Harrison, not that long ago, of this is my now second time through leading into a launch for a book. And it's odd because you feel it the first time and you think that it's just the first time jitters. But now I'm realizing, I think this is just how it is, where you really vacillate so rapidly between being really excited and then just dread and anxiety and how is this going to be received? And then you're online too much. And then it's, you know, okay, I don't want to look at anything. I'm going to just cocoon and keep myself away from the world. So I am, as of today, I'm very excited again, instead of the nervousness. But yeah, of little under a month now, which is surreal because I feel like it was so long ago that I turned it in, but that's publishing.
I know. I think we scheduled this interview in like July.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God. And now it's November and the book's about to come out and it's just crazy.
Yes.
I love this book.
Oh,
I love this book so much.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness. So I want to first up at the top, and we'll remind people about this later, but Christy is coming to Gibson's Bookstore January 27th.
Which is so exciting.
I can't wait. We're going to have so much fun.
Yes.
It's going to be a witchy good time. And
for sure.
Probably no hangings at a tree. Hopefully.
Hopefully not. No. Hopefully I'm going to try not to not have that happen.
Yeah. We'll avoid all spooky trees. But mark your calendars, everyone, because you're not going to want to miss that event.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled because, one, I've never gotten to do any sort of a book tour before. And so it's exciting to have have it happening. But then also, I am a very untraveled hick of a person. And I just haven't done a lot of travel. And that's honestly partially it was money based. And then, growing up, it was just not something my family did. And so to be able to come up to the Northeast and kind of go to some places I've never seen before, I'm excited just for that. If I'm like, yay, New Hampshire, this is new.
It's
I'm
gonna be
so,
so fun.
yeah,
And we will
absolutely.
wish good weather upon the late January. We
Oh my
should be
goodness.
okay, but yeah,
Yes,
we'll.
yes.
So Dark Sisters, could you give what's your elevator pitch for this one?
So, elevator pitch is Dark Sisters centers around three generations of women, all in one town called Hawthorne Springs. Over that three spans of centuries, all dealing with the fallout associated with having to grapple with the reality around them of what the world expects them to be versus who they truly are or who they want to be, but are told that they can't. So we have a woman in a 1700s timeline who is escaping an accusation of witchcraft. And in doing what she thinks is best for her and her daughter, she sets loose something that she never anticipated. And then in the 1950s, we have a very traditional housewife and mother who wants very much to live according to the desires in her heart, but is told that she can't. And how those things from even the 1700s ripple into her timeline and then into the 2000s with a preacher's daughter who is now dealing with what has been set in motion from all that time ago in what is really honestly a curse that affects the only the women of this town, and they fall really, really sick and have terrible thing boils and things in their mouths, and then some die, some don't, and she is now dealing with it impacting her directly and trying to figure out how do we stop it? Why is this happening? And so it's essentially looking at the impacts that we make when we try to hide our innermost selves and how that unfolds over three generations of women. So it was a fun book to write. It was a sad book to write, but it felt necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I actually was also talking to Rachel Harrison recently, and we were talking about how horror is such a unique, it's so uniquely positioned to examine really important topics and really difficult topics in like wrapped up in, the horror bow. It's like, oh yeah, it's a ghost story, it's a witch story, it's a demon story, but it's like, oh, it's a story of like misogyny and women and shame and like how dare a woman try to do literally anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that horror is such a wonderful genre because we really do get to take these concepts and these things that are really awful in the real world, and you can put these symbolic trappings on them. And that's not to say that's because we're trying to be precious or cute or, particularly smart about what it is that we're doing. But I feel that those they mesh of if we really want to examine a monster, we can do it through this lens in a way that's really effective and maybe reminds some people that monstrosity isn't always incredibly insidious. Sometimes it's very quiet. And so, like for instance, in the 1950s timeline in Dark Sisters with Mary, her husband doesn't start out monstrous. And that's the thing is that it's this really slow slip into that stuff. And so I think that horror does a really wonderful thing in that we can look at some of these things in a more refined way rather than just, hey, here's a monster and it's awful and be scared of it. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I love it. I loved the three timelines and the way they're braided together.
If you read the book, you'll understand that joke.
Wink,
That was
wink, nudge,
getting
nudge.
wet.
It's so beautifully done. And I was curious, like, did you have a favorite timeline to write? Was there, and did you write like all of one and then all of another?
Right. So I'll answer the second part of that first, and then because it leads into the next part. So I initially the book went through several drafts, and originally there were it was only Camilla's point of view.
Oh, okay,
And
interesting.
as I started building that of it then became there needs to be something else that guides this because we were getting flashbacks, but it wasn't through any particular point of view. It was through Camilla doing research and looking into things. And so, but I said, I need a voice here. And so then Anne's perspective came in, and I loved writing her point of view because I was a teacher for a really long time. I taught the Crucible every year. The Crucible was always my favorite play to teach, and not just because Daniel Day-Lewis is the hottest person on the planet in that film.
Truth.
My students never understood of every time when he would be screaming, "Oh, that is my name!" and his teeth are
Oh.
all nasty because he's been in jail for forever. And I'm just like gripping the table, like, "Oh gosh!" Never understood. I'm like, "One day you'll get it. One day,
They'll get
right? It's
it.
passion."
Yes.
But I loved Anne's perspective because it allowed me to go back into those moments of the in the play where you had that sense of voice and that time period. But Mary's perspective came in last. And it was really at the suggestion of my agent where she said, "We think we need one more perspective here to kind of capture everything that has happened throughout the spans of history that has been a limitation on women." And the 50s, I think that really, I mean, it's that time period. And when we think about it, that's the time period. And so I didn't anticipate it, but Mary ended up being my favorite. And it's probably obvious, or at least I think it has been to a number of people who've read it, where I think they pick up on it because they say, "Oh, Mary's my favorite too." And I went, "It's probably because it was my favorite." But I felt that her voice and the things that she wanted out of life and her sense of longing is most closely tied to just me as a person. And so I really felt deeply connected to her and was really sad as I was writing her storyline because I knew what was coming and I knew where it was heading, but I also recognized these things have it has to happen this way. But to answer the question about writing it in order, I probably would have been a lot easier to write the whole timeline all at once. But no, I went back and forth. And so I had really a very, very detailed outline that I had already plotted everything out. For the most part, there were still some things that as I was writing, I went, "Oh, okay, this, I can add this in now." But I just had a notebook next to me with those very detailed outline and those very detailed notes. And so I would swap back and forth. And generally, I couldn't do two in one day. But there were some days when I did of jump from one voice to the next. And that was hard to have to go, "Okay, wait, let me make sure I'm making this as distinct. They don't all sound the same." So,
Because that was something that I noticed is like in when you're reading Anne's perspective, like it does feel like you're reading The Crucible or Nathaniel Hawthorne, like the voice is that time period, right? And then when you're reading Mary, like it does feel like you're reading something written from the 50s, and Camilla is very modern. Like it was really well, like I could always tell no matter where I picked up the book, I was like, oh, I know exactly whose timeline I'm reading right now, based entirely just on the language.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful to hear. It really is because when you are dealing with such distinct time periods, and I even with Anne's time period in the 1700s, one of my very first notes from my wonderful editor was, "I think we need to draw back on some of that language," because I had in the original had all the these and thous and thines and what and everything else, because that's just what I knew. And she said, "I understand of the need for authenticity and to create that authentic voice, but I think if you want a reader to not have to really stumble through, we might need to just dial it back." And she was right. I think anyone who's ever read Wuthering Heights and had to get through that Scottish phonetic, right? I mean, we get it. We get it.
No, I love it, and I loved all of their stories so much. And yeah, there was, I wish that I had had like a camera on me while I was reading, because the facial expressions I was making while reading this book just vacillated so wildly from like, oh, my heart, to like, oh God, what?
Perfect.
It
That's excellent. I know. I loved that's that you love to hear that as a writer because it is one of those things where as you're going through a page or a chapter or a scene and you're hit, trying to hit these emotional beats and you're hoping that they land because a chapter will take you days and days to write and it may take a reader 20 minutes to get through it. And so you're because it feels so slow as you're crafting it, you're like, oh, please let this hit. So I'm so glad to hear that.
Oh, it totally hits.
Thanks.
I wanted, so you mentioned The Crucible, and I've brought up Nathaniel Hawthorne. I know those were two kind of inspirations behind this, but I wanted to know if you wanted to talk more about like where this book came from.
So it was an interesting path. The concept of the Dark Sisters themselves was the initial kind of igniting spark, I guess, if you want to call it that, because I had written a completely different book with them at the center of it in a very different role than what they currently occupy. And I had it ready to go and sent it along to my wonderful agent, and her note back to me was, I think that the market is oversaturated with this sort of book right now. And she was right because I had seen it starting to happen. And then it's one of those things where I think, once your idea is in your brain and it goes out into the zeitgeist of the universal minefield of all of a sudden you start to see your idea
Everywhere.
everywhere, or yes, right. It's you go buy a car, and all of a sudden you see that car
Yes.
everywhere. So I said, okay, that's fair, and I started to pick at some other ideas, but I couldn't let the concept of them as an entity go. And so from there, it was, what's their purpose? Why do they exist? And why are they scary? What do they want? Which is, I think, the classic author question. What does your character want? And so in starting to pull that apart, there were some things going on just around in the social climate, political climate. Roe v. Wade had just been overturned. And I was going through a lot of kind of unpacking some old memories and some old experiences with being a teenager and with things related to purity culture. And so all of those things just seemed to slot together at exactly the right moment. And then I went, I think I have it. I think I know what I want them to be about. And so from there, the story started to unfold of what if we had a group of women in a society that looks really beautiful from the outside, but the reality of it is that what are they giving up in exchange for it? And the idea of a mega church. I watched the doc that I think it was HBO documentary, The Way Down,
Oh,
which
yes.
if you've seen, right, about the lady who was the leader of a mega church, but her entire thing was built on the idea of Jesus doesn't want you to be fat. And the you know if you're hungry, just pray a little more. And that everything was very wrapped up in the physical appearance, and then correlating that to holiness. And so I got very interested in that as well because there were portions of my life growing up in a church that were very similar. And so those things all just started to meld. And then it took a while to really hammer down Camilla's voice and Camilla's storyline. But then once I had her, everything else just fell into place.
It was really funny. Funny.
The word.
Just kind of like reliving those kind of purity culture moments and being like, oh yeah. Oof.
Right. It was everywhere.
Time.
It was
It was
really
everywhere.
everywhere for a while. And I mean, I think to some extent it still is. I mean, up until I stopped teaching, it wasn't necessarily as linked to the whole idea of the purity ball or the rings, like that whole idea of true love waits, where you'd get a physical ring to wear around. But there were a lot of, I remember a lot of sweatshirts with the phrase virginity rocks that boys would wear to school, and I would be like, boy, okay.
Buddy.
Right, be bless your heart. But it really was of it dominated the culture. I think if it, well, maybe not everyone's culture, but I think if you were in a very kind of specific subset of kid or teenager, it hit you pretty hard at the time.
And even, I mean, obviously within the church scene, but even just in media, I mean, I remember everyone talking about, oh, like the Jonas Brothers are wearing purity rings. And it's like, why is that a thing we're talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
That's
And
so weird.
it was very and it was made to be this very symbolic thing. It was a commentary that was being made because I was older when the Jonas Brothers hit. And so I was already teaching and working, but I remember the South Park episode with where it was evil Mickey Mouse and the Disney Corporation coming in and like, you're gonna do this because it captures an audience and that audience will pay money. And so it was very interesting to see that still holding on, even as we were in, was that the tens, like the 2010s? It's not that long ago.
I know. I know.
Well,
It's so weird. But yeah, like, oh God, just the whole, reading about the purity ball and then like going back and seeing like the origins and like how that started. And I was just like, whoa.
Yes. And
Oh,
I
whoa.
feel like people who didn't know about it or people who didn't experience it, because I've heard this from friends or even, colleagues or people that I'll meet where they think that it's exaggerated of, and I'm going, no,
No, it's real.
this is real. Of, I stood up in front of my entire church and pled to, well, he wasn't my biological father. He was my stepdad, but still a paternalistic figure, and the other girls to their daddies of my virginity to you, daddy. And he had a whole thing that he said back, and that he agreed to hold my virginity in his heart and to make sure that he did his best to keep me pure by monitoring the things that I wear and who I talk to and
Oof.
where I go. And yeah, and they get you because it sounds fun. Who doesn't want to go to a prom? I
Right,
mean, that's
exactly.
essentially what it is.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to wear a beautiful dress and get some jewelry and like hang out with their
Absolutely. You get that really good punch that they serve where they put the sherbet on top. It's the good shit. I love that punch. I shouldn't because I'm an adult. But that stuff is so good.
You know what? You're an adult and you can make it anytime you want.
That's very true. I need to remind myself of that more frequently. Of, I have the ability now and the money to do what I want,
It's true.
which includes the
True.
party punch.
Yep. You can have the party punch without the
Anytime.
terrifying party.
That's right. I don't have to give anyone my virginity anymore. Goodness gracious.
Oh, horror.
I know. And
Like,
that's the reality of it. But yeah.
yeah, it's. Man, yeah, this book, man, it hits.
Thank you. Thank you. I
It's
so
so
appreciate
good.
that. Yes.
It's so good. So I want to kind of keep this because we're doing an event in January. We're gonna keep this a little bit short and we're gonna leave it as like a teaser. Like, don't you want to know more? Come talk in January. But before we wrap up, I gotta ask, I'm a bookseller. Have you read any books recently that you want to shout out that people should be reading?
So I have been a very bad reader lately, simply because when I'm writing, it
Yeah.
is very difficult for me to read, simply because I have a tendency to want to just absorb what that book is doing. And in terms of plot, in terms of voice. And so I really have to be careful and limit myself. But I am currently reading and really enjoying Diavola by Jennifer Thorne.
Oh,
And
yes.
I've had that on my to-be-read list for forever now. And I am really loving it. And then the other one that I have to that I intend to read next, and I have bumped it up because I have a very trusted friend who has told me again and again, you must read this book, and that's Old Soul by Susan Baker.
Oh, okay.
And is she said, you're gonna love it. It's very cosmic horror adjacent. And I said, okay, perfect. I'm so excited. But then the one that I've read recently that I keep suggesting, here it is. I'm gonna pull it out because I want to make sure I'm saying it correctly. Yes, okay. Gray Dog by Elliot Gish.
Oh, yes.
I cannot say enough good things about this book.
Amazing.
This is the one here lately where I think I've recommended this to everyone in my life. And it's the sort of book where I think if you were a spooky child who also really loved Anne of Green Gables,
Yes.
this
Oh,
is the
yay.
one. This hit that I feel like in life there are books that you like, and then there are soul books.
Oh,
Where it's right, and your books that you know this,
yeah.
where there are the ones where you liked them, you know, you read them, you liked them, but then you go back in a year and you go, I forgot I read that. This is not, this will stay with me forever. And so I can't say enough good things about that one, but that's, yes, to me, this is a must read.
Oh, that's amazing. I have that somewhere on my
Right?
shelves, and I just haven't read it yet, so I
Yes.
will bump that up my list.
Right. That's always the thing is there's so many. I have a gajillion.
Yeah.
And they're around and I love to have them, but gosh, they
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a dangerous industry we have put ourselves in where we have so much access to so many good books
No,
and
I
so little
know.
time.
That's it. And then too, the ones that are coming,
Yeah, yeah.
you get to get so excited and then go, will I be able to read that before it's been out already for 3 years? So
Yeah.
there's one coming out that I'm so excited. Oh gosh, it's Nothing Tastes as Good.
Oh,
And
yeah.
is that Luc? Is it Dumas? Okay, I think that's what it is. I'm so excited for that one. Oh, I keep seeing, and so it's always, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. So many good books.
Absolutely. Yes.
Amazing. Well, Christy, oh my gosh, it was so good to chat with you. I love this book so much. I can't wait to hand sell this to everyone starting December 9th. Oh my God. I've had my
Love
little
it.
pre-order card up for a while. I'm like, you guys need this. This book is so
Oh,
good.
thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I mean, booksellers and librarians, y'all are the lifeblood. Y'all are the thing that keeps us going. So I speak for every writer in saying thank you. So,
Oh, it's literally the best. It's the
yeah.
best thing to be able to do to just shout about awesome books.
I agree.
Well, we will wrap that up there, but I will see you in January.
I know. I
I'm
am so pumped.
excited.
I get to wear a real coat.
Oh my God, yes. Winter coat, boots, you're gonna be so
I
cozy. It's gonna be great.
never get to do that in Georgia.
Oh, we'll have hot chocolate.
I have a deep longing for fall and winter clothing and layers, and I can't do that here. So,
See, this is why it's fun to go on tour in January.
yes, exactly. Very excited.
Well, best of luck with the launch, and I will see you in a couple months.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yay! Huge thanks again to Christy DeMeester for joining me on the podcast. Dark Sisters comes out on December 9th and is available for pre-order now. And mark those calendars so that we'll see you on Tuesday, January 27th at 6:30 p.m.
for our in-person event at Gibson's with Christy DeMeester celebrating Dark Sisters. I can't wait. You can't wait. We all can't wait. I'll put links to everything in the show notes, including the link to her Etsy shop where she sells her amazing candles. I've already got 16 of them. I'm going to be getting more for the holidays. I'm obsessed with them. I can't get enough, and I can't get enough of her books. So thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye.